If I believe in myself, why should anything you say affect how I feel about myself? If you say something about, oh, Rob, looking a bit chubby there, or oh, Rob, what's that, some backpack you've got on, or who wears a suit and a T-shirt? Well, if I like my style and I like who I am, why would anything you say affect me? In fact, the way I dress and the way I look, I like people to say they don't like it because I like to be different.
Hi, you're listening to The Self Sessions with me, Marissa McCallum. I'm a body and mindset coach, social entrepreneur, and writer. I help you discover what you want, decide how to go for it, and feel like you deserve it. In this space, we will explore all things life and what it means to be human. Sometimes it'll just be me, sometimes not. Perhaps I'll bring along some friends or a fantastic guest to open up the conversation. But in all cases, each episode will be delivered with one single intention and my mantra for life, wishing only love. Let's get started. Hi, today I'm joined by Rob Moore, who's an entrepreneur, investor, author of 18 Amazon and Audible bestsellers, a prolific podcaster, two-time public speaking world record holder, and founder of the Rob Moore Foundation. His podcasts are The Disruptive Entrepreneur and The Money Podcast, which I listen to in over 192 countries worldwide. Welcome, Rob.
Hey.
Hello, how are you?
All good in the hood, thanks.
Awesome. Thank you so much for joining me today. I know that time is money.
My pleasure. Well, time is life. Time is life. Money.
Tell me more about that. Do you believe that time is money?
No, I don't believe that time is money. I believe that tasks are money. So here's why. You could spend 5 minutes on a task and earn $1,000 if you perform that task well, and you're productive and effective and efficient. You could spend 50 hours trying to get your data from one phone to another, which is why I never change my phone, and you could earn nothing in those 50 hours. So actually the task is the money, not the time, because no two tasks have the same value of money. So no, time is not money. Time is a human construct, because if space and time are infinite, like some scientists say, then the past and the present and the future don't exist, because time is just infinite. It never started, it'll never end. So human beings can't understand that. I can't get my head around that. So we've created time, the amount of laps we do around the sun or the moon or whatever, the day, the night, the seasons. So time is a human construct. I mean, I know why people say time is money, because they don't want you wasting their time and they want to monetize their time. But sometimes you don't want to earn any money on your time because you want to be grateful, or you want to spend time with your children, or you just want to experience life for what it is. But a lot of people, especially entrepreneurs, they get into this mode that they've got to work harder to make more money. But I wrote a book called Life Leverage, which challenges that concept. I think you've got to work smarter. I think it's craft over graft. Labor used to be the way you'd make money 30, 40 years ago, down the coal mines, in the factory. Now you put a YouTube video up and it goes viral. Or you get a little pixelated image and you launch it as an NFT. So no, time is not money.
And craft is the graft.
So craft over graft.
Craft over graft. Okay, so craft over graft. How long did it take for you to realize that that was the case?
Well, I'm probably still realizing it, because my dad raised me to be an entrepreneur, and sometimes I just can't help being addicted to hard work. Now, it's funny, because most people before they've started a business aren't addicted to hard work. They're doing just enough to get by in a job that they don't quite hate enough to leave. And they're not quite uncomfortable enough to leave. And they're getting paid just enough not to leave. But that's not working hard. But entrepreneurs who start and scale their business, you know, we hustle, we grind, we do long hours, we get up early, we work late. But I've noticed in myself that my energy wanes at 3 o'clock. There's no point working from 3 to 5 p.m. I've noticed I work better getting up early. I noticed there's some tasks that no matter how long I do them, I mess them up. So outsourcing, leveraging, getting a great team of people, getting them working hard and not you working hard and you overseeing them, craft over graft, guile and solutions and creativity and innovation. This isn't hard work. This isn't down the factory line, or this isn't down a coal mine with a pickaxe. So the way that we earn and deploy capital through labor is different now. These kids can earn 20, 30, 40 million on YouTube. I mean, imagine someone down the coal mines 30 or 40 years ago. What's that? People just doing pranks on YouTube or opening and unboxing toys. So it's all changed. The game has changed.
And some people might say, that's fine, Rob. You're already a multimillionaire. It's easy for you to say that. But obviously, from what I saw on your website, it wasn't always the case. You had to learn how to bring money in. When was it that you started on that journey? And when did you first feel rich?
So social media and gaining virality and more reach into revenue is actually easier from a standing start now. I have a TikTok account manager, Facebook account manager, Instagram account manager, and they've all basically said to me the way their algorithms work is that it's not just about your following and the size of your following anymore. And what they do is they send it to your following. And if your following reacts well, then it's sent out to a wider audience. And if you've got three followers and two of them comment, that'll get sent out to a wider audience. And you can go viral really easily, for example, on TikTok. So, yeah, to say it's all right for me in terms of, you know, gaining this reach and impact. Well, when I started, there was no monetization tools on social media. Now I know of 15. It's the greatest time to be a creator and an entrepreneur. Really is the greatest time. And no, I wasn't always a multimillionaire. And when did I feel rich? Well, you know, I was 50 grand in debt, December the 15th, 2005. Credit cards and car loans. And my dad had raised me to be an entrepreneur, but I just got stuck in the school system and GCSEs and A-levels and universities. I never knew what I wanted to do. I knew I was a rebel and, you know, a rebel in a conformist sort of state system doesn't usually end up well. And it wasn't good for me. My dad had a nervous breakdown in his pub on December the 15th, 2005, in front of all of his customers. Massive nervous breakdown, actually got beaten up by the police, sectioned, arrested and diagnosed with bipolar or manic depression. And that really woke me up to stop being lazy, complacent, scared, hurt, lonely, arrogant, cocky, defensive, and uncoachable, because I was all those things. And you could say it wasn't my fault. I've kind of forgiven myself and let that go. But that set off a chain reaction of events, which meant that I got out of debt and made nearly 100 grand in my first year, became a millionaire by the end of my fourth year before age 31, a decamillionaire, 10 million net worth assets minus liabilities by about age 35, and it kept growing. When do I feel rich? I mean, there's been times when I felt rich financially. Like, I didn't actually feel that rich when I was a millionaire. I didn't have £1 million cash. You don't have to be £1 million cash to be a millionaire, but entrepreneurs often want more. And when you hit the 1 million, you want the 10. And when you hit the 10, you want the 100. I probably felt the most rich when I was the most comfortable with myself. I had loads of watches, actually sold quite a lot because I don't need hundreds of watches. We have 15 cars at one point, me and my business partner. Lamborghinis, Ferraris and Porsches and yada, yada. I would say I feel the most rich when I am connecting and engaged to people and feeling grateful for what I've got, not just chasing for more.
And I think that's something that comes across on your website and all the information I saw in terms of the impact that you want to have and the amount of people that you want to help. What is it that keeps you going on those days when you feel tired and you can just actually stop because you've got enough money or you feel like you've got enough to stop now?
Okay, so here's the thing about being tired. You're only tired for a little while. And then you wake up again and you've got energy, or you have a coffee or you eat something or you go for a walk. So people, what they do is they get tired once and then they give everything up forever. Just don't make any important decisions when you're tired. Simple. So, you know, fatigued or burned out, you know, now that's a different question. But I don't think anyone is fatigued or burned out doing what they love. So, you know, how do you keep going? You make sure you turn your passion into your profession, your ideas into income. You make sure that you turn your content or your creativity into cash flow. What you already know into cash flow. You love what you do and you do what you love. So that's step one, I would say. And step two is having a clear and meaningful vision and mission. So my vision is to help as many people on this planet start and scale their business and get better financial knowledge. I want to help entrepreneurs start and scale up. I want to help creators, artists. I want to help small business owners. I want to help people make more money and make more of a difference, create recurring income streams, and you know, reach more people and make more impact. And being really clear on, you know, what my vibe is that attracts my tribe, if you like, and also, you know, having that vision and mission that's way grander than me. That keeps me going through the hard times, through lockdowns, through difficult situations, through legal issues, through with critics and trolls and haters and all the disruptions and everything else. But I'm only ever tired or demotivated for 4 or 5 or 7 hours until I go to bed, and then I wake up and then it's 5 a.m. and I get to go all over again.
You mentioned there about the critics and the haters, and the, you know, a lot of the people that listen to this podcast, they have to spend a lot of their time on social media to promote their work or to put out their creative content. How do you handle the haters, the trolls, the people that are nitpicking on a wider scale for you?
I'm really grateful for my haters and my critics, because if I didn't have any, I'd be really small and no one would know me. And actually, I want to be bigger and make more impact. Therefore, I need more. So if you've got any spare, send them my way and let everyone know that Rob likes critics and haters. So I'm very grateful. Like, they challenge me. They keep me humble. They keep me grounded. They're good for my reach and my algorithms. They're really good for comments. You get a lot of critique and trolly comments. And so that's really good for the algorithm. More comments, more reach. Yeah, I'm super grateful for them. Why would I not want more? Like, you know, the most successful people that have ever lived have had a very clear and meaningful vision and mission, and they have not let critics distract them. And I want to be the kind of person, and look, I'm a bit of a softie and I've got some hurt and pain from when I was younger. So this is not an easy thing for me, but I'm going to do it. But I want to transcend any criticism affecting me. Like, why should, if I believe in myself, why should anything you say affect how I feel about myself? If you say something about, oh, Rob, looking a bit chubby there, or, oh, Rob, what's that, some backpack you've got on, or who wears a suit and a T-shirt? Well, if I like my style and I like who I am, why would anything you say affect me? In fact, the way I dress and the way I look, I like people to say they don't like it, because I like to be different. So that's feedback that I'm being different. And if no one said it, I wouldn't be being different. And I like to be different. And by the way, you can't want to get noticed, but then not want to get noticed by the critics, because that is not how it works. So yeah, bring more critics, more haters, chuck them all to Rob Moore. He'll have them all.
There can be an element of feeling like you take it personally, especially if you use your name for your business. So you could feel like the haters are attacking you. You mentioned there about just having belief in yourself to overcome that. How did you create that belief in yourself? Or is it something that you've always had?
Oh, no, I haven't always had it at all. The opposite. So I used to be the fattest kid in my year at school. And the only way to adapt and survive at school and not be ostracized from the group and the constant tormenting and bullying that I thought I got, sometimes I got it, sometimes it was in my own head assuming it, was to be liked by everyone. And I developed these people-pleasing strategies and these ways to be liked by everyone. And but what that created was a very soft person who was very, very, very susceptible to any kind of criticism or talking about me. And it would wound me and hurt me, you know, big time. So no, I had to learn it. Business taught me it, because business teaches you those lessons. And I had to learn and develop it. And, you know, if there's a criticism that gets through my skin, it usually either means, and I'm taking this responsibly, i.e. I'm owning this. Because by the way, when people criticize you, it's usually something wrong in them, but we'll come to that. But if I get some criticism and it gets through my armor, it usually means that there's some truth in what they've said And so I feel some emotion around that, maybe a bit of guilt or a bit of embarrassment or a bit like, shit, you're right, I need to sort that out. Or it makes me check my self-worth. Because if it affects me, it may mean that I don't have good self-worth, or I may have sort of disowned parts of myself or not feel good about myself in those areas. So let's say I'd put on a little bit of soft cuddliness around the tummy. And, you know, I was on a live and someone said, oh, you're looking a bit cuddly around the tummy. You know, if I wasn't happy about that, that might make me feel an emotion. Now, you know, it's not really a particularly critical thing to say, but I think you only really take criticism really personally if you're not sure who you really are. Because if you're sure who you really are and you're very happy with who you really are, nothing can shake you or break you. There is a caveat, and that is if people attack my business or they give me, if there's defamation or they could commercially hurt me or my brand or my reputation. If someone said something really extreme and that got a head of steam, like they accused me of something that I didn't do, being a scammer or I don't know, something like that. I that wouldn't feel good. I probably would get lawyers out when that happened to protect my brand if it wasn't true. Now onto the critic side. Usually if a hater hates you, so a critic is someone who gives you feedback that's probably quite useful, often not said in the way you want it to be said. Don't go and hate on critics. We need critics. We need critics, keep us humble. They give us feedback. They keep us grounded. We don't get ahead of ourselves, cocky, complacent, or arrogant. And we all would. I'm telling you, we all would if there was no such thing as a critic. However, a hater is fake profile, you know, hurtful, nasty comments, etc. These people are usually hurt themselves. They usually tried and failed. You know, they usually hate themselves. They're lost, they're lonely, they're wounded, they failed. So it's more a reflection of them as it is of you.
And just being certain in that and reminding yourself of self-worth and checking in with what's happening for you.
Yeah, look, you know, there's nothing about you not to love. Love your flaws as well as your successes. Own the disowned parts of you, i.e. love what's weak about you as well as what's strong about you. Love what you hate about you as well as what you love about you. There's nothing wrong with you. And we're all uniquely different. And, over the years, as I've got older, I've learned to like things about myself that I didn't like. I've learned to forgive myself about things I wouldn't or I would hide from. And I've learned to see the good in others. So, if someone would challenge me, I would not like them. I'd people please around them because I learned that. But I can see the good in everyone now. I can, what people perceive as nasty people, every human being is capable of doing kind and not hard, nasty, cruel acts if their values are challenged.
I just wanted to pick on something you said earlier, Rob, about the experience that you had witnessing your dad just having a breakdown. And the idea of, you know, being brought up as an entrepreneur and having to graft initially, that's something that really resonates with me. I come from a family of grafters. When did it shift from you feeling like you needed to graft to bring money in to finding your way to working smartly and, you know, bringing in money with ease?
Okay. So I'm like I said, naturally, I probably am still a bit of a grafter and I'm still trying to unlearn that. I've got nearly 100 staff across 3 companies. We've got probably 70 or 80 contractors and similar number of outsourcers. So I've got about 250 people I pay to do work for me. So there's a good way. Anything you're shit at, pay someone to do it. Anything you hate doing, pay someone to do it. There's a good start. And that's pretty logical, you know, and anyone can do that. So start with what you're shit at and start with what you hate and, you know, outsource it. Pay someone to do the job, a one-off job, or get some admin help or whatever. And as you do that, you'll learn, actually, there's more and more and more that you can outsource. And the less that you do and the more that you delegate, the more rich you become. And then you can focus on high income generating tasks and all low income generating tasks you can outsource out and admin out. A lot of entrepreneurs have these limiting beliefs. Oh, if you want something done properly, do it yourself. Can't afford to pay staff. Don't want to manage staff. Don't want any of the responsibility of staff. Yeah, can't afford it. Yada, yada, yada. And these are just all limiting beliefs. So you've just got to get over those and take a few little risks. Allow people to do things maybe not quite as good as you at the start. Allow them to fail and make mistakes at the start, because you have to let go to grow.
And you mentioned the word risk there. And that's something that I've noticed. It's like your tagline in terms of, if you don't risk anything, you risk everything. What's the biggest risk that you've ever taken?
The biggest risk I took was not starting a business or not getting into entrepreneurship until I was 26 years old, 27 years old, 26, 27. Because from age 18 to 25, I got myself 50 grand in debt, lost my way, didn't feel good about myself, didn't have any money. And ever since being an entrepreneur, any risks people might perceive I've taken are not really that risky compared to risking going bust or risk getting fired. I always say, if you don't risk anything, you risk everything. So my greatest risks are not the risks I've taken, they're the risks I've not taken.
I love that. The fearlessness in that. Okay, Rob, I know that we've only got a short time with you today, so I just want to invite you to do a couple of things I ask all my guests to do.
Bring it on. Let's do it.
Ready? Okay. Yeah. First thing is to complete the sentence, if I ruled the world,
I'd find someone more worthy than me, probably a female, to lead the world and just have a little bit of input behind the scenes.
That
was probably the hardest question I've ever been answered. What went through my mind was, I'd like people to be kinder to each other. I'd like people to have a better relationship with money. I'd like everyone to have the opportunity to make a living and start a business. But I probably wouldn't want to rule the world. But I'd probably look at educating the world to be self-sufficient financially, so that we could all make an equal and fair living. That's probably what I would focus on if I ruled the world.
Amazing. And
I'd have free vouchers for Alexander McQueen.
You'd receive free vouchers for Alexander
McQueen. Yeah, I could have all Alexander McQueen clothes for free.
You're telling me you're still paying for this clothing?
Yeah, I haven't quite done the sponsorship deal yet. It's coming, I'm sure.
It's on its way. And finally, what do you love about yourself?
I love about myself that I'm able to take difficult situations and see the upside in them and manage my emotions most of the time and turn that round and see the benefit and the positive in it. And I've learned to do that. And I love that about myself. I also love about myself that I am a lot of people around me. I bring quite a lot of energy and enthusiasm and excitement. They're two things I do like about myself.
I've definitely felt that today, Rob. Oh, I did have one more question. Could you lend us a tenner?
Well, with interest, of course. Yeah. There has to be an interest payment to incentivize you to pay it back.
I appreciate that. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks a lot.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode of The Self Sessions. If you did, please share, like, subscribe, and stay in touch by heading over to marissamccallum.com. I am, of course, until next time, wishing only love.